AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The thing it creates, my hope for democracy, is just it makes people realize that they can do more than just vote and that they can solve the problems. The more you make friends and the more you have fun doing this thing, the more you want to continue, explore, yeah. Learn, and then you learn more about the problem and you say, what can I do more? And yeah. Then it becomes kind of a natural path.
Welcome to How to Citizen with Baratunde, a podcast that reimagines citizen as a verb, not a legal status. This season is all about how we practice democracy. What can we get rid of? What can we invent? And how do we change the culture of democracy itself? We're leaving the theoretical clouds and hitting the ground with inspiring examples of people and institutions that are showing us new ways to govern ourselves. At the start of COVID, I remember being terrified. The streets were quiet. The coyotes and the deer had started taking over our driveways and our sidewalks. For those of us who could stay at home, depending on who you were, it was shocking, but kind of easy. For others, it was life-denying, especially if you were someone who lived in an elder care facility. I remember phoning up my friend a lot during this time, and I'd always make sure to ask him about his grandparents. I'd never actually met them, but I felt like I did because he talked about them so much, so they'd always come up in conversation. He shared this story, that they were both living in the same care facility, but they were each being isolated in different rooms, in different wings of the building, in fact. They were together, but completely alone. And that was so sad to me. At the same time that this deep loneliness was being experienced by so many people around the world, there were also people with nothing to do at home, feeling helpless but wanting to feel helpful. And finding out that Christian Vanizette, the person you're going to hear from, helped spark a phone calling program that matched young people with elders to keep them company, that was just really moving to me. On the surface, this idea of young people calling old folks homes sounds real basic. But then the majority of our human needs are real basic. It doesn't mean that they're easily or regularly met, though. This program, it became so popular that the French government added it to its official volunteering website. So, not that basic. And that's just one of thousands of projects that Christian has helped bring to life. Christian was born in French Polynesia, in Tahiti, actually, and now he lives in Paris. My wife and I met him through our friend Diana, an American who's basically living a better version of that Netflix series, Emily in Paris. Anyway, we were recently in Paris, between work gigs, and decided to interview Christian in person. We walked over to his offices in the Bastille neighborhood, where the French behead their leaders. Okay, one of the places the French behead their leaders. I was so excited to be there that I didn't make sure we had the best audio setup. So you may be able to hear that we're in an office and not, in fact, a sound padded studio. And I may have clipped Christian's mic to his hoodie drawstring because I'm not a professional sound engineer, okay? What I am instead is someone who's very excited to add Christian's voice to the How to Citizen world. He's built something that is moving and so perfectly aligns with the way we see citizen as a verb. I also want to make sure that How to Citizen isn't just an American thing, even though I am a very American thing. I love America and I love not America as well. And we got a lot to learn from people outside of this country. Christian has inspired this global movement of citizens who are passionate about crowdsourcing solutions where they live, solutions to our most pressing social and environmental problems. And he's done it by essentially becoming a recruiter and I'd even say a matchmaker. The organization he co-founded, Makes Sense, draws in citizens who want to take action but don't know where to start. Does that sound like somebody you know? The group places them in small teams of strangers who want to make a difference on the same issue, and then it empowers them by giving them opportunities to shape the projects they'll be working on, opportunities to learn from each other, to become team leaders, and then to recruit their own friends and start the cycle all over again. Since starting a decade ago, Make Sense has seen nearly 300,000 people attend workshops, has opened offices in 7 countries, and has started volunteer chapters in over 100 cities around the world. It's been so successful, Christian's gotten the attention of many government leaders and was recently selected as an Obama Scholar Fellow. Remember Obama? Yeah, we still like that dude. And yeah, I know. Volunteerism has been around for a very long time. And we've definitely seen a lot of organizations that help place volunteers inside of other organizations. But the method that Make Sense uses, it's bottom up. It's citizen-led, locally based, and the work and the projects that they foster and support, they're culturally appropriate to each place. Because Make Sense HQ is taking all its directions from the people on the ground, not imposing some top-down template from on high. And now, a decade in, Christian and the organization's many volunteers have increasingly turned their attention to the fight to stop and even reverse climate change. We know the basics here. Humanity's got limited time to avert climate disaster, and we need to reduce our carbon emissions dramatically to achieve that. That means more electric cars, renewable energy, regenerative agriculture. It also means we need to stop fossil fuel extraction. And that's going to be hard. Researchers have identified hundreds of carbon bombs, like coal mines and oil and gas projects, that would release at least 1 metric gigaton of carbon dioxide emissions if they move forward. You don't have to know what a metric gigaton of carbon means. Basically, the people who do know what this means, the experts, they're terrified of these carbon bombs because they understand that if they get built, it likely means the planet will warm past 1.5 degrees Celsius, the threshold set by the Paris Agreement. And warming past that number could intensify hunger, conflict, and drought worldwide. Now, one of these projects is the East Africa Crude Oil Pipeline, aka ECOP, and it's run by the China National Offshore Oil Corporation and the French oil giant Total Energies, or Total for short. There's a campaign to stop it, and it's called, wait for it, Stop ECOP. I love the creativity. Now, Christian helped launch this campaign in France, based on what he's learned from a decade at Make Sense. And the way Stop ECOP is trying to defuse this particular carbon bomb, it's creative, strategic, it's even fun, which isn't something I generally associate with the climate movement. Like Nse Ufot, who we heard from earlier this season, Christian is finding ways to bring joy and communal connection to the ways we participate. But instead of focusing on elections, he's bringing that energy to the ways we volunteer and even the ways we protest. You'll hear how Christian helped create a global movement and just how organized it is right after the break.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, Christian.
Hello.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
So what is Make Sense?
So Make Sense is a nonprofit that started in Paris. And basically, we train community organizers all across the world. So they mobilize volunteers in their community for social or environmental issues. And it's, 10 years ago now, it's around 300 employees across the world.
Ooh.
And more than 300,000 volunteers.
300,000. So you've basically built an army. That's undeclared. Does the UN know about your army?
We just built a way for people when they see a problem.
Yeah.
We train them and they know how to mobilize other volunteers and we link them up with experts, social entrepreneurs, and then the citizens self-organized, 15, to do the thing they want to do, like collect things, help the elderly, but between themselves and not needing a big NGO like the Red Cross to tell them what to do.
So take me back to the beginning of Make Sense. Who were you before then?
Yeah.
What were you doing with your time? How old were you? And how did this idea emerge?
So I come from Tahiti, French Polynesia. And I arrived in France for my business school.
Okay.
And during the time in the business school, I studied social entrepreneurship. So I was really interested in how business can do good.
Mm.
My dad offered me the book of a guy named Muhammad Yunus.
Yeah.
He's the Nobel laureate of peace in 2006.
I'm interrupting my own interview with Christian to add a little context. I like to call these explainer tune days. Professor Muhammad Yunus, you just heard mentioned, is a giant in the world of social entrepreneurship. He started this project called the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh in the late 1970s, and it became internationally renowned for its revolutionary system of microcredit, which gives loans to entrepreneurs too poor to qualify for traditional bank loans. And it's helped millions escape poverty as a result. The unique feature of Grameen is that no collateral is required to get the credit. Dr. Yunus was one of the first leaders to talk about the possibility for business to do good and set limits on infinite profits. His concept of a social business defines financially self-sufficient businesses as those whose primary aim is to address a social problem and not pay dividends to its owners. This idea, often referred to as social entrepreneurship, it's inspired many people in the worlds of business and economics. It actually sparked Elizabeth, my wife and executive producer of this show, on her journey around all this too. In fact, you could say Professor Eunice is one of the reasons we even know each other. And now back to my conversation with Christian.
A guy named Muhammad Yunus, yeah, is the Nobel laureate of peace in 2006. And so I was really inspired by how you use business to do good. And so in the business school, with my friend Romain, we said, okay, what about we create a platform where people can support social businesses, so people who start business to do good. Mm-hmm. And this is how the idea of Make Sense was born. And to start, we decided to go at the root of where social entrepreneurship for us was invented, okay, which was in India and Bangladesh. And so we negotiated with the school that instead of going to university abroad, was supposed to go to Germany,
yeah,
that we do a backpack trip for 6 months.
So you convinced the school, instead, yeah, of studying abroad in Germany, you're going to backpack around?
Around India and, yeah, Bangladesh. And so we went with backpacks to meet social entrepreneurs,
okay,
and do videos about them and start to build this platform where volunteers could come and help them.
What year was this?
It was 2010.
Okay.
And so Make Sense was just a Facebook page at that time. And every time we were arriving in a city, like in Mumbai, we would start a Facebook group to say, hey, we organize a workshop to help this project that's helping people with disabilities have access to like the information in the subway.
Okay.
Do you guys want to come help?
Yeah.
And so every part of the trip, we started a Facebook group. And then we organized the first workshop, which is a 3-hour workshop. People would come together, give ideas and skills to the entrepreneur. We called it the hold up of ideas.
The hold up.
And so then we gave the PDF in the Facebook group,
yeah,
how people could continue to do it. And every time we go, and now there's like 250 Facebook groups and people using the method, and this is how Make Sense was born. It was really organic,
yeah,
and kind of just people using simple toolkits of workshops by themselves.
And how do you, because so much of what many of us understand, social improvement, change, like you need expertise, you need deep training, and you're a kid with a backpack and a dream, you're not from India or Bangladesh. In this particular case, I presume you don't have a deep history of understanding,
no,
accessibility in public transit in India. So what role are you playing in bringing strangers in the form of these entrepreneurs and strangers in the form of these volunteers together to try to solve their local,
yeah,
problem?
So the main point was to say we want volunteers from the city itself.
Okay.
And so what we acted like was just facilitator with a toolkit and methods, and also connection between these local communities. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in Mumbai or when you're in Marseille, in the south of France, and you're a student in a business school, you want to do good, you feel kind of alone, mm-hmm, in your school. But then, thanks to the internet, you feel, oh, there's someone else who also feels alone in the other side of the world and who has the same ideas as me. And so by the role was really to facilitate with methods, but also connect all these communities,
yeah,
that want to make change on a global scale. We use all the tools of community organizing. So all the local staff, local office are run by locals and they decide by themselves what they want to do. So it's not like the headquarter in Paris, yes, giving orders. And this is what's a bit different from other NGOs.
You've described playbooks, workshops, a process, and community organizing as the kind of DNA. Where did you learn these things yourself, or where did the organization in its journey decide this is what belongs in the playbook? This is how we're going to organize ourselves.
Yes, the playbook was really about how to run a brainstorming.
Hmm.
So it wasn't even as like how to community organize at first. It's just how to get people together and everyone can participate and give ideas. Basically creativity workshops, hmm, and ways to create ideas together with post-its. And in a country like France, might seem obvious in the US, but in France, since you're a kid at school, we never ask you what is your idea, or we always think there's a right answer or a wrong answer, and we can only talk if you have the right answer. And so for students in France to just say, I don't need to be an expert, I just come to this workshop and I can express myself, give my point of view, my ideas. And so this would make it go like super fast. And then from the trial and error process, we fell into the longer thing of organize your local chapter and other methods to keep bringing people together.
And how have you been able to make sure that the solutions and the ideas and the creativity people are putting forth are actually relevant and have a positive outcome for the core problem that they're trying to address?
So for us, the expertise and the local knowledge mm-hmm. is the entrepreneur or the NGO who work on the field for many years, and they define what is the challenge, what is the ideas they need, and then the volunteers come and help. So okay. the two legs of Make Sense are supporting the entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and getting the citizens to join and support them. And over the years, it grew into like funds and more programs to help the entrepreneurs grow.
I need some examples.
Yeah.
In this vast history, 300,000 people, 300 staff, I don't know how many entrepreneurs. Can you, what's a few examples of projects that you've helped?
One example, in France, you have a project that is really big now. It was really small at that time. It's called Back Market.
Back Market.
To make you buy your old phones instead of the new ones.
Okay, so instead of Black Market, it's Back Market. Helps reuse.
And so it was really interesting in circular economy. And so the challenge they give when they launch is which kind of event could we organize to make Back Market known?
Okay.
And so the volunteers came together and the idea was to organize the other keynote. So the same day Apple said the keynote about the new iPhone,
yeah.
Back Market was organizing the keynote about the old iPhones.
Yeah.
And the volunteers came up with the ideas and helped set this up. And now it's one of the biggest startups in France. So it's one example.
Yeah, I can just testify, taking the metro around all week as we've been in Paris, I heard of Back Market just a few months ago due to a company we have a relationship with that's based in the US. But seeing the billboards, it's like, oh my God, Back Market is huge over here.
Yes, no, it's huge.
And you all literally helped launch it.
At the beginning, yeah. So there's many stories like that. A story I love is during the COVID time, there was like this startup that we help support, which is to connect the elderly together so they don't feel alone with their family. So what we set up was through this program of self-volunteering, mm-hmm. we had like 4,000 people in 3 weeks who went on a platform to call a random elder and then have weekly conversations with them during the top of the COVID time. And the way the volunteers built the trust with the retirement house to get the numbers was by the first thing we told them is first you bring them a cake to the director. And so you had volunteers showing up, bringing cake. And then once the director said, okay, I'm okay to give the number so you can call, then it went into a listing.
Yeah.
And people were picking up the phone and calling. This example of program was taken by the French government on its public volunteering platform. And so then it becomes officially something you could do during COVID.
Did the government acknowledge the origin of this idea?
Yeah, like, I mean, they bring us in the groups. And right now this program that's called Reactions, a 2 weeks program, so you can take action to help the elderly and that, is working with the state to become a public policy.
Wow.
To make it that the way the youth engagement program of the state, which is around 300,000 young French people per year, works the same way that our program
works.
And so it's really interesting after 2 years of just an idea during COVID, mm-hmm. and then it helps become a public policy.
And how much did you spend on lobbying dollars with your government to get them to
adopt
your program? That's how we would do it in the US. You have to give a lot of campaign donations.
The thing they need is that they had too much demand on their platform and not enough offers.
Mm. And in this case, because it's such a clear case with COVID, isolated older people, young people who want to help. Can you lay out a bit of the pieces of how that came together? Was there an initial volunteer organization that had relationships with, elderly homes? Was there a young person who missed their grandparent? Like, what's the seed of that solution?
At the beginning of COVID, no one knew what was going to happen.
I remember that. Scary.
And at that time, I was studying in a program in New York at Columbia University with the Obama Foundation.
Okay.
And so we had a briefing from the team that was working with President Obama on preparing pandemics.
Oh, wow.
So they organized the day the whole thing started.
Yeah.
We do this briefing.
Okay.
So I just joined the briefing and I told the Make Sense team, hey guys, this thing is like real and it's going to be a lot of mess for the most vulnerable people. And so then we saw like it was the elderly, the young people because they couldn't go to studies, the people that already don't have house or how do they access to hygiene products and all that. And so we had 6 programs at the front lines and we just said, okay, let's do a digital program where people self-organize in groups of 15. And for each program, we ask our experts, the social entrepreneurs who've been working 10 years with the homeless, 10 years with the elderly, what is the actions people should do? We build those toolkits and we launched it with, like, I think the first week was 150 people. And each group of 15, you had one organizer whose goal is to get people excited.
Like a team leader.
And the magic of the thing is that each group then created 3 people to become the team leader. So you have one group and the next week would lead to 3 groups. And this is how we grew the system. And it was really exciting, but it's also amazing to see the power of digital tools because it was all running on WhatsApp and emails when you plug it with community organizing. But this method, you can use the same for activism, for elections, even something to get a virus to spread.
a different type of virus as opposed to the COVID virus that's spreading. Because what you have co-created with the community isn't a top-down playbook, you kind of set the stage and it's emerged. Groups of 15 people scaling, self-replicating, self-teaching like a positive virus. I'm curious what you've been learning about where people go from here. If you've unleashed these tools of collaboration and problem solving and growth, what have they seeded that is kind of a derivative of some of this type of organizing?
So what's happening now is we see the first model that we had, which was based on people meeting in real life and doing workshops together. And this model, which was really like digital, since COVID is starting to go away, is kind of a merge of both.
Okay.
So we see the people who did the program in their cities getting together and say, hey, let's meet in real life. And then they start to think together what they could do next. So it's really interesting because then it spins kind of out of Make Sense.
Yeah.
But the good part of it is just you, from the statistic we had, is like 2/3 of the people who did this program never volunteered before. So the thing it creates, my hope for democracy, is just it makes people realize that they can do more than just vote and that they can solve the problems. The tension we're seeing right now is that the news you get on climate, for example, or the social and environmental issues are becoming really urgent. And sometimes they feel a disconnection on the small action they can do to help someone. And then the big problem that comes, so especially from the youth participant of the program, we see that there's a will to become more kind of, even more than just volunteering, like really become an activist to push for more radical change faster. And what we're trying to build that makes sense is to say, okay, we help start social entrepreneurship, especially in France. Why don't we create accelerator and incubator for activists? Because this is a trend we see that people realize they need change of the systems faster. So the volunteering part is kind of the, what I think is like you start as a volunteer and 2 years after you might become an activist.
But that wasn't the explicit intention.
That wasn't the explicit intention.
But that's some of what emerges when you give people these kind of tools.
Yeah, the more you get, you make friends and the more you have fun doing this thing, the more you want to continue, explore, learn. And then you learn more about the problem and you say, what can I do more? And then it becomes kind of a natural path.
One of the things that I've experienced, and I think a lot of people who will hear this have, is a sense of isolation. In the face of great challenges, we feel alone. We have our phones, which are supposed to connect us, but they kind of make us feel smaller. And in the US especially, our connections to each other are weak. You know, we don't have churches as much anymore. We don't live with extended family anymore. We don't have the clubs we used to have in terms of just the power of being with other people, maybe who are even different from us. What have you learned about the power of gathering or associating through volunteerism, through these small groups of 15, in terms of a culture of civic engagement that goes beyond voting?
So the thing is, when it was the workshops,
yeah.
So basically people coming to help a social entrepreneur on his project and idea, the people we were having were mostly like people who did the higher degree studies.
Okay.
So they were students or young professionals, and they came because they were applying what they were learning at school or universities.
Mm.
When we did the COVID programs, and then the first call to action wasn't to come to a workshop for 3 hours, but it was to call an elderly and have a discussion, which is something everyone can do.
Yeah.
And this was really great because the demographics of people participating were really like looking like the French society, all age, all background. And this was really amazing because you could see like different, and once now they get together in real life, I think it's going to make something powerful because they're going to define actions or things that look more like the French society than what it was before COVID. And this is bringing different people who didn't knew each other before.
What you've described so far and built sounds great. It's like hundreds of thousands of people reconnecting with their society, with each other, solving problems, not just waiting for a government or some big business to come and fix it for them. What is the hardest part of pulling this off? What are the things that we're not hearing yet in terms of the challenges?
Yeah. So like building the organization, finding the financing, the business, all the things people don't see.
Yeah.
It was really tricky, especially that it started as an organic movement, makes sense. So we had those volunteers running these workshops everywhere. And then we built the organization to run after them. So, oh, there's a lot of people speaking Spanish. Oh, we need a support team to do the training. Oh, let's, okay, where? In Mexico. Okay, that, okay, the first volunteer, okay, join. You're in the team now. Build this whole thing. And so the building the organization was a bit tricky, but it's like any entrepreneurial journey.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's really frustrating now is that MakeSense has all these volunteers, these employees. For the social entrepreneurs, we even have a fund. Like we have 100 million
euros. Like an investment fund.
An investment fund we can invest. And it just feels like, okay, this is great and we're happy in the team.
Yeah.
But like the problems seem so much urgent and huge that when I started, that I'm like, what can we do now to accelerate? Because it's not just by continuing what we did during 10 years. Then we would make a bigger dent in the issues we're trying to solve as an organization. And so this whole questioning is what's happening in the team now, and we're trying to see what's next should be done so that we can like make a bigger dent in the problems that are becoming more urgent.
So what type of person ends up doing what you're doing? Why does this move you so much?
Yeah.
The idea of MakeSense, the idea of empowering people to collectively work to solve their problems. Where do you think that comes from?
I grew up in Tahiti, it's really a small island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And my grandfather was from the French Navy, and he arrived there with a boat, and he met my grandmother, who's a Tahitian from Tahiti. He started a soccer club and had a lot of friends. And so then he went into politics. And he was the first president of the local assembly. Because Tahiti, even if part of the French Republic, we have our own government.
Right.
And the first law that he passed was the social security. So people to have free healthcare.
And you are so French!
Free healthcare and a free, not free, but retirement for everyone.
Yeah.
And this was kind of the biggest thing you could do for advancement in Tahiti.
Yeah.
And so I grew up in this family of people super motivated and engaged. And when I needed to study, I was like, okay, where do I feel is going to have the biggest impact? And my guess was the economy is running the world.
Mm.
And so finding ways to tweak the economy and making run to solve problem and not just make more money is why I choose business school. And also the thing when you talk about global challenge, for example, like climate change, it's super scary when you come from a small island.
Right.
And the main narrative you hear is like, these are the first place that are going to disappear. And so I really engage on this topic because you can see the effect right now on the corals. But the problem is that you come from Tahiti, it's so small, you can't do much about the problem of climate change from Tahiti. It's not because 100,000 people take their bikes that things will be solved.
Yeah.
And so then you realize, okay, like 70% carbon emissions come from big cities. So people acting in New York, in Paris, in Manila, it has more impact to save my island. And so this is kind of why I was selling, like connecting the dots and local communities acting. It's what needed for this kind of challenge.
Yeah.
And in a really selfish way, I'm kind of doing it.
You're just trying to save your home.
I just hope.
this all comes back to self-preservation, but through collective action.
After the break, the wild and clever tactics Christian and thousands of others are using to defuse a carbon bomb.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you've made this connection many times to climate change as the accelerating type of global crisis, and the idea that you can't solve it just from where you are. You have to look to other places to kind of affect where you are, which brings us to this pipeline, this East African crude oil pipeline, ECOP, that you are very much against. Can you give some context, more context for the pipeline and the connection of this kind of self-organizing volunteer effort to try to stop?
Yeah, so we do the same as what we did during COVID. You know, what science says we need to do and we need to help is the same with the climate.
Okay.
And one of the first recommendation of the scientists of the International Energy Agency is really clear. They say if we want to keep the Paris Agreement alive, so not more than 1.5 degree global warming, the first thing to do is no new oil and gas infrastructure.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean no oil from tomorrow. It means we don't need to build new ones,
right?
Because it will make global warming worse. So I just was thinking, what can I do to participate with my capacities to this priority that the scientists said? And so in the climate activist movement, what happens is that if you're in the UK, you focus on the UK oil company. Mm-hmm. So it's BP. If you're in France, this company is called Total.
Yeah.
And so I looked at what is the thing we could do from France to make sure there's no new oil. And so this company is building one new oil and gas project. It's going to be the longest heated crude oil pipeline. So it has to be heated at 50 degrees.
The longest heated crude oil pipeline
in the world.
In the world. Okay.
And it's go from Uganda to Tanzania.
Okay.
And so the first thing we did was to ask the local activists there, like, what do they think about the project? And
So I just want to pause you right there, because a lot of us don't do that step.
Yeah.
Right. So you have had a initially kind of analytical approach, right? I read the IPCC report, the International Energy Agency. They said this is important. I looked at the energy companies that were kind of within my reach. I'm French. It's in Total. Boom, boom. Then I checked with the local activists to see what they want. I need to reaffirm that pause, because a lot of people skip that step and just say, we got to stop this, we got to do that, and don't check in. So what happened when you checked in? What did they say?
So because the thing is, we don't know the local realities.
Yeah.
And so maybe they will say, oh, we really need that energy, or we really need these things. And then what you realize is that there was a court case from local NGOs and people affected by the pipeline who were taking Total to court in France to say that this project don't happen. And the biggest thing that happened is that there's 100,000 people being displaced.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of mobilization in Uganda, not from what we thought was the angle of climate, but from the angle of human rights. Like for the last 7 years, they can't use their land because it's going to be on the way of the pipeline.
Right.
And it's mostly farmers. Mm-hmm. So basically, there's a huge amount of farmers who are like, we can't use our land, you're not compensating us.
Yeah.
And so what we did when we started the campaign in France was to say, okay, we need to bring voices from Uganda to come and tell to the French people that we're so proud of saying we invented the human rights and all these things, to just say what a French company is doing there. And so that it's known and people realize that this is a mess, not just for the climate, but also for the lives of the people.
So listening to the activists on the ground, listen to their story, find the connection to the story of the people you're trying to influence. So French people take credit for inventing human rights. You know, the Declaration of the Rights of Man is a very proud part of French history. So if you really believe that, then you're going to be really sensitive to these stories of these people.
Yeah, right? And so they came to tell the story. And once you spend 2 weeks with them and you're like hearing their stories and everything, you're like, it's kind of the motivation to do the fight and what we need to do. And it's very human, because climate is something really like hard for people to grasp.
It can be very abstract, very analytical, numbers-based. Yeah.
And also it was really important for us that the start of the campaign was the activists fighting for years on the field there, promoting their voice first so that they are more known and more protected, because we don't know what could happen in Uganda. And the second thing is to tell this oil company that the Total keeps saying, but everyone in Uganda wants it and stuff, to show, no, there are some people who don't want. It's just that they're being repressed.
Yeah.
And so this was the start. And when you look back, I think it was the best angle, because it's really the thing where Total is pushing to say, like, but it's like people from the north who don't want Africa to develop.
So they're basically saying, you're racist for stopping Africans from having progress economically and moving forward.
Okay, we're going to hit pause here. You don't have to hit pause. I'm hitting pause on my own conversation for a quick factum day check. What Christian's saying here about Total needs a little bit more context. We couldn't track down any instances of Total Energy saying these exact statements. However, they did recently post something to their website responding to a quote-unquote set of misconceptions about ECOP and another project. They said the following, which I will deliver in a cartoonishly French accent because I find their behavior to be cartoonish. We could ask ourselves whether the desire to prevent countries like Uganda from exploiting their natural resources is not itself inspired by a vision that is neocolonialist or selfish, to say the least. What local Ugandans want to see is a developed country with infrastructure catering to people's most basic needs. Critics, you're the colonialist. That's good. I hope they're paying these people well. No, they don't say Northerners don't want to see Africa develop, but we can agree it's implied, given their response seems to be responding to non-Ugandan detractors of the project. And yes, in that statement, Total doesn't outright say that everyone in Uganda wants ECOP to be built. But by saying that, quote, what local Ugandans want to see is a developed country with infrastructure catering to people's most basic needs, in a company post that's specifically responding to misconceptions about this project, I think we can infer that they're meaning that locals want ECOP, whereas non-locals may not. But next to Total, the Ugandan government has been much more direct. After the EU called for ECOP to be halted due to human rights abuses and climate concerns, President Yoweri Museveni responded saying, "They are insufferable, so shallow, so egocentric, so wrong." I don't know if that's his accent, but that was, I'm certain, his energy. Now, this may seem extra to fact check, given how much is implied here. But when you're fighting multi-billion dollar companies with padded marketing and legal teams, getting specific with our critiques is a necessity. Just part of the job. And now back to my conversation with Christian.
It's really like a big fight and to win the narratives.
Yeah.
Where most activists from Uganda, what they tell you is that, of course, they want development, but it doesn't need to be a dirty development. Because
dirty,
if there's a leak, it's going to be the fishermen from the Lake Victoria who won't be able to fish anymore.
Yeah.
So, of course, yes to investment and things like that, but it needs to be renewable, different kind of projects and not old oil pipeline.
Yeah.
Especially in a moment where we're not sure oil is going to continue in the long term being a good asset to have.
Right.
So if a country develops itself on an asset that's going to be not good in 20 years, then you're screwed. And when you look in Africa, they didn't let the land phone, you know, they directly went to mobile phones.
Yeah.
So why not doing the same on the energy?
I got an idea for the campaign name.
Yeah, okay.
Totally screwed. Boom. That was a free one. There you go. Workshop it. You know, I'm not in the brainstorm, but you get added to the team list to consider.
it's been really an interesting fight.
And so as you have engaged further in this fight to stop this pipeline, the size of the problem feels very large. How have you gone about further breaking it down into pieces that groups of volunteers can feel like is approachable for them?
The first thing to know is that there's what we call carbon bombs.
Carbon bombs.
So it's new oil and gas projects that is creating a lot of carbon emission. This pipeline, for example, in Uganda alone, it's 7 times the emissions of Uganda.
Yeah.
So these projects create a lot of, you can be millions taking your bike. If these things happen, it doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
And so it's really the urgency in the climate movements.
Yeah.
And so the goal is to make sure that everything we do on this pipeline can be replicable because there needs to be activists and campaigns like that happening all around the world against all these oil companies.
Yeah.
And so the key thing, the key pressure point on all these carbon bombs is always the same, is the finance.
Mm-hmm.
And so where there's a lot of citizen power that can be used is to put pressure on the banks so that they don't fund.
Yeah.
But even better than the banks is the insurance. Because if you put pressure on the insurance, then the bank don't want to lend to a project that's not insured.
Too risky.
And so then you break it down. Okay, what can citizen do to put pressure on an insurance?
Yeah.
And so then you need to track which insurance might insure the pipeline. And so, for example, there was one in Germany that was called Munich Re.
Yeah,
and so
huge.
Then we contacted the local, the most well-known activist in Germany. And we say, hey.
Again, checking with the people on the ground.
What can we do to get them out of this project?
Yeah.
And then she said, and in Germany, we're really lucky because she's really powerful. When she tweets, there's like thousands of people going in the street. So she just did tweet to the CEO. The next day, the guy answered, okay, we're out. And so this is how many insurers, that, like all the German ones, really easy. You just need Luisa Neubauer to tweet. In other places, it's more complicated. And so right now, Total is going to try to find an insurer in the marketplace for insurance, which is in Lloyd's.
Okay,
in London.
Lloyd's of London, yeah.
And so right now, and so all the dirtiest projects on the planet, they all come to Lloyd's at some point.
Wow.
Because Lloyd's is made to dilute the risk. So instead of saying I insure the whole project, is I insure 2% of it, and someone else say, oh, I insure the other
2%. Yeah, so no single person holds the whole risk.
And so then it becomes really tricky. And so what we created is a WhatsApp group with 60 volunteers.
Okay.
And every day at lunch, you have two people going with posters, Stop ECOP, and the flyers.
Mm-hmm.
And their job is to recruit within the insurance marketplace who knows which actor might finance, etc. And also which one is against. So they give their emails.
Yeah.
And then we basically recruit employees within the insurance marketplace to give us information. And then once we know these guys, they post on a WhatsApp group, and then we have hundreds of people sending emails, direct emails to these people. Don't do that. And then every 3 weeks, we have a big happening in front of the Lloyd's marketplace.
Yeah.
So the last one was organized by Mothers Rise Up. They had 150 dancers who came and did a show of, I forgot her name, Chim Chimini, Mary Poppins.
Okay.
And so they did, because the story of bankers being sad, because so they had 150 bankers with a fake Mary Poppins.
With a fake Mary Poppins.
Saying to the CEO of Lloyd's, like, yeah, insure our future, don't insure those projects.
Wow.
So you have these multi campaigns like that, yeah, mixed digital WhatsApp groups, and these techniques were hold Lloyd's dropped from Adani coal mine, a big coal mine project.
Okay.
So we know it works. You just have to find the right pressure point. And the hardest part is to get the information. So actually the best job to do is to go every day, make friends, have lunch with them and get the information, and then it's easy to organize.
Like an intelligence operation.
And it's all run by people who are 19 to, yeah, 21. And there's an Instagram account where they post every day, hey, we're every day in front of Lloyd's.
Yeah.
And this is really pissing them off. Like the project costs 1.5 billion more. It's around like 10 billion. Because of all these tactics to not find insurance and things like that.
So I'm hearing at least two things. One is consistency, and just like every day at lunch, two people go and do this thing. So there's a rhythm to it. I'm also hearing play, fun, joy. You're hiring dancers, young people are getting excited. A lot of the image that we are taught about what it means to engage civically is it's boring, it's sad, it's cold. And maybe you call your member of parliament or your member of Congress and hope they listen to you until the next day. This sounds much more active and much more fun. Is that by design?
It's because from the history of Make Sense, we know that if people volunteer, they're not paid, they need to have fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they don't have fun, they'll not keep going and keep doing. For example, at every end of the week, they will meet all together in a pub. It's in London, mm-hmm, and then they make friends. And at the same time, it's really fun to be like 20 years old and to scare all these CEOs and to cost them billions. And when you're just with one person, it seems like they're giants from outside.
Yeah.
But then they can be so weak.
They're
too
fragile.
So
they're,
it's very the, fragile. Also really, you play on fun and also this rebellious. This really sad part is, even if people have fun and there's all this campaign, there's still some real things happening.
Yeah.
Like activists in Uganda, when you're not in England or in France, it's a bit different, the political regimes there. And there they're being put in jail and things like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So I think it's this mix of being real about the issue, but at the same time, knowing which tactics to engage more people then can work. Just so that it doesn't become just a fun thing,
yeah,
that you then detach from the reality that's really not fun.
And I think that's essential because things can get too performative and feel, like you said, disconnected. I also, there's something you were describing, even in terms of the digital activism, which is often rightly criticized as clicktivism.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a disconnect from real outcomes and real impact because it's so easy to like and share and retweet, especially if that's not part of a larger strategy, it doesn't matter. How are you ensuring that the digital actions are meaningful and really connect on the ground?
Yeah, so the on this specific campaign for the pipeline, it's first, there's a coalition of NGOs all around the world opposing it, and they build and decide the pressure points.
Yeah.
So okay. There's an NGO that specialized in analyzing the financial actors, the banks and the insurance, and they say what is the thing that can hurt the most.
Right.
And actually sending an email to these people in this insurance, they're not used to receive emails from everyday citizens. So it's also the novelty of the action.
Yeah.
So this activism is not just like you're expressing something like you write to your congressman.
Yeah, or a big petition,
a big
on
petition.
Change.org.
Yeah, example. You need, yeah, just five people sending an email to that guy who never received emails from any citizen, yeah, stuff. And say, hey, I'm watching you. What,
yeah,
you
like, wait, you're looking at me?
Yeah.
You're looking at me?
And then,
oh, no!
And then they're like, wow, for them it's new. They're not politicians,
yeah,
and stuff. So this is how you can design the right strategy of digital activism. And it's finding where it can be the most useful. And often it's just a tool to help the NGOs campaigning. For example, right now there's like people being arrested in Uganda because they protested against ECOP. And so the main things to do is we put pressure on the French ambassador in Uganda so he condemned and asked that they're released, because all of this because of French company.
Yeah.
Of course, there's NGOs who know really well the ambassadors and they know really well the foreign affairs of France. And so they lobby, they go talk to them. But if at the same time there's hundreds of citizens sending them email, it gives more power to this nonprofit when they negotiate. So it's just about launching this at the right time. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of a puffer fish. You know, you're appearing bigger than you really are, and you show up with allies, and you're like, we have a massive army, and it's like five kids emailing.
but the cool thing is that then you have at the same time the journalists who talk about it, and then you can make it a thing. But it's also because at the end of the day, it's not okay that in a country that say they are the country of human rights, that because of a French company, human rights are not respected.
Yeah.
So it's still tied to something really deep in the people who are trying to mobilize.
Yeah. It's not just a charitable do-good. It's holding people to their own standard.
Yeah.
And reminding them who they say they are and giving them a chance to be who they say they are, which I think is also a pretty deeply empathetic approach to persuasion, activism, and even pressure points. There's some love in that pain.
Yeah.
You've recently launched an app. Can you describe this app and how people might get involved in it?
Yeah, the complicated part about this oil and gas pipeline is that there's a huge number.
All these carbon bombs.
And so every time what we realize is that, for example, you need 5,000 people to send a message to a bank that they're client of. If 5,000 people send them an email saying, hey guys, I really don't want you to use my money to finance this kind of project, this ring an alert in the bank. It's a reputational risk. So Regroup is just a platform where people can join the campaign and send those emails when it's the right time to do. Mm-hmm. But then we know these people, and if there's another campaign and they can directly help on the other campaign, so that you fast track how people act together using digital tools.
Yeah.
My hope is that people will start by sending an email to this insurer, and then they will end up being the people in front of Lloyd's in London every day at lunch, being more active.
Right. So, I mean, it's like going to the gym. You start with a little exercise, and by the end, you're running the whole circuit because you've gotten stronger.
Yeah.
We like to leave our listeners and our audience, our community, with things they can do. In your experience through this campaign, through the decade of Make Sense, how have you grown to interpret what it would mean to citizen as a set of actions or as a verb? What does that look like to you?
To me, one thing I learned, I was during this 1 year in New York at this fancy university at Columbia in this Obama program. We were eight. And there was one girl who was with me, also in the cohort. Her name was Weiwei Nu.
Weiwei Nu.
She's an activist from Myanmar. And she spent her whole teenage year, 7 years, in jail because her dad was in the party of Aung San Suu Kyi. And so the junta put her dad in jail somewhere, put the whole family in the jail somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I really realized that before I was doing myself, people were volunteering and stuff like that. But one of the exercises we had to do during the program was to tell the other person's story to the others, but talking at the first,
And
so you hold that story like a baby, and I had to tell the story of Weiwei, which was all about the pain, the suffering in the jail, and being far from her dad, and at the same time going out after, and you think the junta is out, but then her community is the Rohingyas, so they were still persecuted after, and this just hearing her story and having to say it completely transformed me, and this developed bigger side of empathy. And for me, this is the thing of how to citizen is to, when you hear someone's story, to really feel it, and then you can't take it away from you. The story of this activist in Uganda, the story of Weiwei. Now, I would do whatever I can, whenever, just to do something because their story is in me now.
Yeah.
And so I think this is the thing that really changed me, and how to citizen, I would say, just to let others' stories of injustice that happen, of things that need to change to the world, not just mentally, but let them live in you.
At the risk of sounding very much like someone who enjoys puns, that makes sense. So thank you, merci beaucoup, for giving us a window into how we can make more sense, have more fun, and have more power when we do it together.
Thank you.
Four seasons in as we are with this show, I hope you are familiar with our refrain about how civic engagement and citizening has got to be more than just voting. Voting is necessary, but it is not sufficient, especially because many folks can't vote by law. But we can all participate in shaping our communities and in solving our own problems. Our first pillar of how to citizen is literally show up and participate. But many of us, we're out of practice. We need a way in. And it helps if that way in is also fun. What excites me most about Christian is that he's helped create a gateway drug to citizening. Makes Sense helps people build and practice that collective problem solving through volunteerism, which sometimes slides into activism. It's these practices that help reinforce a culture of small-d democracy, a culture so crucial to upholding a democratic system of self-governance. Christian is a recruiter for helping us all practice democracy, helping us all citizen by showing up. And he's successfully recruited me. For real, like, I get excited about all of our guests, but I don't necessarily always go all in on the thing they just built. I tried the beta version of the Regroup app he mentioned, and I did the Stop ECOP daily actions for a while. And it's all in French. Because, yes, your boy also speaks French, but it also speaks to how addictive and cool and fun the platform was that the French I didn't speak, I was looking up to make sure I knew what I was doing. Now look, you can learn more about Make Sense over at makesense.org. It doesn't really operate fully in the U.S., but there's still a lot to be learned from it, and maybe you'll be someone who starts a U.S. chapter if you're here. Check out the Actions to Stop ECOP on Instagram, Stop EACOP, where there's actions you can take in the U.S. Because unfortunately, BlackRock, which is based right here in our own New York State, is an investor in Total Energies, which is a major shareholder in ECOP, which we're trying to stop. And if you want to get in on these daily actions and notifications like me, which got me so excited, you can help stop this pipeline with the Regroup app. It's R-E-G-R-O-O-P, and find it in your nearest app store. And speaking of daily actions, in the show notes, we always have actions you can take after listening to each episode. We give you options to go inwards and feel into the material, to become more knowledgeable, or to get involved with others to make an impact. So here's a juicy prompt for some internal reflection. How do you feel when you hear the words climate change? Like you encounter a story on the topic, what's the dominant emotion? I want you to write this down. And then I want you to think about a different climate story that provokes the opposite, or at least a very different emotional reaction. And spend more time in that one. So when I think of climate change, the emotions that come up are anger, despair, frustration. Now, when I think about a story that shifts me out of that, I think about Christian. I think about a lot of the stuff that we talked about in this episode, and I feel a sense of awe, even a little happy, because I'm like, yo, these kids are getting so creative. And so for me, this exercise is going to be looking for more stories that provoke that reaction. Are there other climate change stories that lead to a sense of awe or joy or excitement or hopefulness, as opposed to the despair and the overwhelmedness that I felt before? The goal here is to be curious and open to your feelings, to be conscious of the emotional impact of the climate narratives you're ingesting, and to consciously try to rebalance that. Now, for more active actions, there's what we already mentioned with the Stop ECOP campaign. And on the other side of this coin, there's a chance to take some personal responsibility for our consumer culture. This culture is fueling more demand for oil, and we can counter that with a different kind of spending. There's this product called Future Card. It's a payment card that rewards you for climate-friendly purchases. Full disclosure, I'm an early investor and advisor because I think it's a powerful way to align incentives in our economy. Find them online at future.green. Also, you may hear people say that it's not on us as individuals to stop climate change. And it isn't on us, at least not alone. But we do have power. And I don't want us to feel like because our governments aren't doing enough, there's nothing we can do. So it's a both proposition. We can lower our demand for fossil fuels while we also pressure policymakers and the oil industry at large to change. No matter what you hear from any side, we truly need to do both to curb climate change. As always, we'd love to hear from you about your experience taking any of the actions. We may even ask you to share your story with future listeners. The show notes got full details, so check them out on your podcast app or visit howtocitizen.com, where we have transcripts, actions, and more. How to Citizen with Baratunde is a production of iHeartRadio Podcasts and Row Home Productions. Our executive producers are me, Baratunde Thurston, and Elizabeth Stewart. Our lead producer is Ali Graham. Our associate producer is Danya Abdel-Hamid. Alex Lewis is our managing producer, and John Myers is our executive editor and mix engineer. Original music by Andrew Epen, with additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Joel Smith from iHeartRadio and Layla Bina. Next time on How to Citizen, we're turning inward.
It's a radical act of citizening to change our story, to change the narrative that we're living within and our relationship to ourselves and others in the world of like, I won't participate in that old way of being, the otherizing, the dehumanizing, the fighting, the oppression. I won't. I'm not going to do that to me. I'm not going to do that to you. I am going to stand for love. I will stand for love. And in that beingness, change my world.
In our final episode of the season, we talk with Dr. Sam Rader, who helps us invest in a relationship with ourselves so we can build better relationships in our communities.
Row Home Productions.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.